Vince Colonna is alongside Mary Walter.
And joining us in studio, Brian Kilmeade, host of Fox and Friends. Do I even have to tell you who he is? Author of a new book, Andrew Jackson and the Miracle of New Orleans, the battle that shaped America's destiny. And coming up, we're going to tell you how you can meet Brian, get your own signed copy of his book. Brian, good morning.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
So glad we finally got you in studio.
And you know how I know I'm on? I'm on the erasable board. Knowing that it could be canceled at any moment, yes. I'm staring right at it. I love this thing. Yes. That is fantastic.
We spelled your name right and everything.
And when you're done with me, will you erase me? Or will you erase much. At the end of the show?
Actually, Larry O'Connor will erase you.
Oh, he will?
Yes.
Okay, because that's the new guy that comes in after.
That's our afternoon guy, so he's the one who will erase it.
Yes. But we took a picture of it, a digital one, though, so we could delete that, too.
All right, good.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
So let's face it, fame is fleeting. I want to talk to you about some things going on in Washington, get your take on it. Let's talk about this budget battle. Rand Paul, you know, stood there and said that the Republicans are being hypocrites because of the spending, and there are some people who absolutely agree with him on that. Do you think the president should be tougher on the spending and instead of signing this bill, maybe getting a little bit harder and tougher with the Republicans?
Mary, it's a great point. My feeling is this. How long are they going to be staring at each other with continuing resolutions? So you're talking about, what, four or five? You have the Secretary of Defense, Mattis, who not only funds the Pentagon, he fights wars. And he says, listen, you have done more damage to the Pentagon than any of our enemies have ever done. Because you can't put us on a budget. Our planes are falling out of the sky. Our ships are crashing into each other. So for some reason, funding the Defense Department is a Republican issue. How the hell that happened, I have no idea. It should be an American issue. But if you want to fund the government, Paul Ryan has said that we have to digest $63 billion worth of domestic spending. And we kept on doing this and staring each other down and waiting for the other one to blink. And we finally said, let's do a two-year deal. And in that $63 billion, let's get the Trump agenda out there. And that's a lot of infrastructure, cancer research, the VA hospitals. So it's spending that the three of us would never do because we're already in the red. We're already in overdraft. But if you look at it from the leadership position, they kept doing the right thing by not dealing with each other, getting equally everyone saying Washington doesn't work. To get it to work, they had to digest this domestic spending. I don't know what other options he would have had. I mean, what do? You just keep shutting down the government and waiting for Chuck Schumer to give in when he doesn't give in? I don't understand what's supposed to happen. Yeah, I don't know what the alternative is.
I mean, if you look at the first year of the Trump presidency, conservatives have been pretty happy. They kind of viewed him as governing as a conservative. And some of the things that conservatives were nervous on, trade policy, things like that, haven't yet come to fruition. So they were happy, especially with the tax bill. The other part of the conservative orthodoxy that has long been discussed, the reason Paul Ryan's even Speaker of the House, is the kind of that fiscal restraint component. And you don't often hear the president speak too much about that.
Right.
And I think as you're looking, because as you see Rand Paul last night, I think you had some conservatives who are like, well, at least one guy's up there saying, you know, being intellectually honest about Republicans. The whole reason we had a Budget Control Act was like, we need to get this under control. We need to like figure out, we need to cut spending, and then we actually have to prioritize things and figure out what's of value. The Defense Department, clearly of value for the very reasons you expressed. But everything else, let's start figuring out like how we cut back some of those areas. And I'd like to see the president at some point here in this year start expressing some concern about that.
Right, because evidently it's 22% of the total budget is discretionary, and the rest is automatic withdrawals from our checking account. So everything else goes out the window. All we're looking at is this small piece of the pie, which is getting smaller, and that's our debate. We're not debating about Social Security. We're not talking about welfare. We're not talking about Medicare. So who is going to have the courage to go into the entitlements and say, let's redo this without he does not like poor people. They do not like minorities. And that's how everything is.
But aren't there other things besides, quote unquote, entitlement spending? We hear all the time about these. We always get a list of projects like making shrimp run on a treadmill to the tune of $2 million to find out
fraud
what effect
abuse.
It has on them. Right. But there are things that I think we could look at and say, this is not, we don't have the money for this. We don't have the money for this. And just get rid of those programs. I realize $2 million isn't a lot, but it's something. And at least shows fiscal responsibility.
I think you're right. I mean, no one says, it's like saying, I'm against crime. No kidding. Well, how are you going to fight it? What's your view of crime? Now, the shrimp thing is, it's a cartoon almost.
Right.
You know, we always see it. But if you look at the big picture, it is the entitlement spending. The fact is, we can't even agree that human beings are living longer. If we can't agree with that, how are we supposed to reform Social Security? They say that's the the easiest entitlement, the least sacrificial entitlement out there. But guess what? As soon as one party says we're going to look Social Security, hey, seniors, they don't like you. They don't like old people. You don't have the senior vote. You don't win a single election. So therefore, we move on. Yeah, so we need a crisis.
I want to ask you, because it's not often we have Brian Kilmeade hanging out with us. I want to ask you just about your role on Fox and Friends and how consequential your show has become. I mean, because a lot of people point to the fact that the president watches it.
Yeah.
It gets and feeds off of it. A lot of the kind of the topic selection you guys riff on, certainly your guests and the way that they influence him. What do you make of all that and sort of and the responsibility that's kind of put on your shoulders too?
Well, I mean, we haven't changed the show one iota. I mean, it's the same way we started with Bill Clinton, then we went to President Bush for 8 years, then President Obama for 8 years. And the only thing that's been consistent, and we're very thankful of it, is our ratings have grown.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, and I've been thinking a lot about this because I get this question a lot.
Yeah.
And the only reason why the president likes our show, as much as we'd like to say it's because we're such great people, is because we represent the people that put him in office. And we didn't do that to get him elected. We got successful because New York and Los Angeles ignored us and Chicago. But the people that have been ignored were getting attention. The so-called flyover country. If you go to Wisconsin, if you go to Jacksonville, if you go to anywhere in Texas, you go to Georgia, all those people are being ignored. So the Kardashians of the world were really not being embraced by that part of the country, and our show represents that. He looks at our show and says, wait a second, I did that show for 8 years, and I got some street cred in the political world. I'm going to keep doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's our audience that he likes. It's not necessarily us that he likes, because we do what our audience likes, and this president does what our audience likes.
Well, I've heard a theory that the president has a great affinity for television producers because he believes that they know sort of how the audience responds and what they care about.
Minute by minute.
That's
we
right.
Get the minute by minute. I'm sure you guys, you could get the minute by minute, too.
Yeah, and so he like keys off of a place like Fox and Friends because he thinks your producers have a sense, as you're to your point, of what his voters care about. So this is kind of an opportunity for him to use that as a proxy.
Right. And if you look at our, I've never seen one thing that's pretty clear. If I'm off like a day like this when I didn't do Fox and Friends, but I am going to be doing my radio show, I'll flip around. And every time I flip around, I'm stunned about how different these shows are and how different people view the same events. And what they choose not to cover is key. It's not fake news. That's a bad headline. It's ignoring news that belongs as your lead. That's the stunning thing. The Peter Strzok text messages should have led every show. I did not see it on the CNN morning show because we have monitors, and I didn't see it on MSNBC.
All right, more with Brian Kilmeade coming up, and sometime maybe we'll tell him the reason we have him here is that maybe the president will listen to us. WMAL, we are here with Brian Kilmeade, host of Fox and Friends, and the author of a new book out, Andrew Jackson, The Miracle of New Orleans. Brian, this is another book in a series of books that you have out. I've read some of them, George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, The Tripoli Pirates. That was Jefferson and the Tripoli Pirates. Tell us about Andrew Jackson. Why Andrew Jackson?
Well, no, I mean, the bigger question is, Mary, why do you always wait for me to give you the book? Why would you ever buy a book? You're always, that is the story. You're like, okay, when Kilmeade shows up, I'll get it.
Why do you think you're here?
That's right. I delivered the book. Allison came with that. Basically, I try to focus on, I love American history personally, and I don't think I could do the definitive biography on any of these presidents, and I think they've been so well done over the last 200 plus years. I thought, what could I bring new to it? And the answer was, I think I could bring out portions of their lives and their careers that need more focus. So when George Washington had a spy ring, I thought, I can't do Washington, but I could do a spy ring that was top secret till 1930. Thomas Jefferson took on the Islamic terrorists? Really? Why don't we talk about that? I can't talk about the Louisiana Purchase or his entire life. Declaration of Independence, first, third president, vice president, secretary of state. That's been done. But I want to focus on a war that he didn't focus on. And yet we're fighting today and how he was different from John Adams. And the next one I thought was logical was the War of 1812, totally underappreciated. If you ever go to the White House, they'll bring you around where the bowling alley is. They'll show you the burn marks that are still there from the War of 1812. They burned the White House to the ground. And that intrigued me beyond anything. And to think our country was flat on its back, the White House burned to the ground, our 5'4" sickly president was sitting on his horse by himself watching Washington burn. And who brought us off the deck? It was Andrew Jackson. Where did he come from? A 14-year-old 16-year-old orphan who already fought as a volunteer as a teenager in the Revolutionary War was determined to get the British back. And how would he do it? The definitive battle in the Battle of New Orleans. And how did he win? That's what we tried to uncover, because he defeated the army that defeated Napoleon in 45 minutes. And when I found out that at war colleges they teach his method, I just said, I got to explore this.
You know, one of the ways that I kind of found out about the book was I read a review of it in Politico, and we were talking about media bias before, yeah. And I think you actually tweeted out the review and thanked Politico for the review, but in it, they actually assigned an historian, a Jackson historian, to read your book, and I can know how this conversation went down. They're at Politico, it's like, oh, Brian Kilmeade, the Fox guy, wrote a book about Andrew Jackson, let's get him. So they hire this historian, they have him write a review of the book. The review is glowing.
Weird. It's weird, though.
The review is like, this is great history, actually. And the headline, listen to this headline and tell me what you think they're trying to say here. This Fox and Friends host wrote a pretty good biography of Andrew Jackson. Donald Trump endorsed Brian Kilmeade's book on the Battle of New Orleans. Here's what he'd learn if he actually read it. Okay, so they're attacking you. They're attacking Trump. They're patronizing you.
Right.
But then they end up writing, this is a great book.
And I'm so dumb, I actually tweeted out in support of the review. So how dumb am I? My thing is that that's you. There's great things to be at Fox. It's 99.9 great. The 1.1% that's bad is everything you do is stupid. If you Google my name, 95% of it is negative.
Right. And I think we see SNL characters before we get to your actual picture.
Right. Was Sunday, which, by the way, was humorless, but we were the cold open on Sunday.
Yeah, as usual.
I have to say I did watch it. I looked it up and I watched it. I punched out halfway through. I'm like, this isn't funny. But that's not new. It's SNL, which is why I don't watch SNL live,
right.
Because it's not funny.
But, Mary, here's the good news. Bobby Moynihan went on to a failed sitcom, so no longer do I have an obese man playing me. So at least I'm fit. I'm still stupid, but at least I'm fitter as I'm being portrayed.
Yeah, we all don't get 100%
good.
Everywhere. You get a little bit of
thank
everything.
Thank you.
So there you go.
But I like to think I do better on the pinch test than Bobby Moynihan.
The pinch test.
It's a goal.
For density, that's right. So you mentioned sort of like flipping around as you see these other shows and, you know, CNN and wherever else. And I always am struck by this trend. I mentioned, you know, Politico. This trend of reporters telling other reporters what they're supposed to be covering. So this happens all the time with Fox. You mentioned the way Fox is treated. Fox will choose to cover something. Your show will choose to cover something. Fox Primetime will choose to cover various issues. And by the way, we know that each of the hosts have dominion over their programs and what they get to decide they cover. Then they're told by, like, every other stupid journalist on Twitter, hey, your A block is supposed to be this, your B block is supposed to be this, and yet they never listen to us on this crap. you mentioned the struck page text. Nobody's covering them in any way in a fair way. It's all about, like, Trump is dumb, this is a distraction.
Right. By the way, your rundown is our rundown. I'm looking at your rundown on the Erasable Board. You're talking about Rob Porter, you're talking about the shutdown, and you're talking about the latest on Russia, which is extremely intriguing, especially with Senator Warner deciding to reach out to somebody who knows Christopher Steele on the side. But the Peter Strzok text messages, you don't need much of a leap. It's really not hard. This is a guy running almost a part of the zealot of this investigation. He's in on the Hillary Clinton investigation. He's in on the counterterror. They find the text. They find the emails on Anthony Weir's laptop. He's in on that. Then he has a plan hatched in July. They leave it out there for you. So for you not to lead with that, I think is befuddling. It wouldn't have been the case with Bush. It wouldn't have been the case with Obama. I think they were fairer with President Obama, who never did anything wrong for 8 years, than they are with President Trump.
I mean, they're incurious. And not only are they incurious, but they're the palace guard. They're rushing to defend the government when it would never have happened that way before. So defend the behavior of the government. This after Hillary Clinton literally just celebrating with Lanny Davis this week, the notion that James Comey was corrupt and gave up the entire election to Donald Trump. Well, how do you have it both ways exactly? I thought Comey was leading the resistance, and now you're saying that he gave the election to Trump?
I heard you talking about his bio. That's coming out. I mean, what could he possibly... I could tell you exactly what's going to start. It's going to start with him being fired in Los Angeles, and they're going to flash back when he was born a 6-foot-5-inch baby, and he grew up and conquering all the odds and always doing the right thing and saving kids from drowning certain deaths and doing fantastic things, and then he gets together and he realizes to save the world, he has to report Donald Trump. How odd is it that he had all these private meetings with President Obama and President Bush, but he only could take notes for the... He knew right away, he's only got the job for a month. Every time I meet with President Trump, I got to take copious notes. How does that play in with Peter Strzok? A lot. What do they think about Donald Trump? They think very little, but they think he's dangerous.
All right. Well, Brian, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. And you, too, can get your copy of Andrew Jackson and the Miracle of New Orleans, the battle that shaped America's destiny, tonight at the Barnes & Noble on Exchange Street in Ashburn, starting at 5 o'clock.
Guess what?
What?
They're serving drinks. Evidently, this Barnes & Noble has a liquor license. And they're actually, this is going to be a big test. Take that, Books a Million.
Yeah.
This is going to be a big test. They will actually serve drinks and give a party atmosphere at Barnes & Noble. And that's what attracted me
this
there.
This is like a college party. How do we get people here? Set up a keg.
How do we get the morning show guys at WMAL here? Serve liquor.
Serve liquor. Booze.
So in other words, they have to serve liquor in order to get people to come to your book signing.
That's what saying. I'm saying. Listen, I'm not shy about it.
Well, go to the book signing tonight at Barnes & Noble in Ashburn, starting at 5. And hey, have a drink. Brian's buying.
Yes.
725. Thank you, Brian. 725 on WMA.